Hey y'all, it's me, Dr. Samina Ramon, Gyno Girl. Welcome back to another episode of Gyno Girl Presents Sex, Drugs, and Hormones. Welcome to another episode. Today, we're going to talk about something that in medicine is historically avoided and frankly underfunded. And so we're going to talk about women's sexual health, which I talk about every single episode almost. For decades, men had Viagra, they had endless investments, they had direct-to-consumer ads during football games, and women were told to relax and have a glass of wine. So today we have someone who is working hard with the rest of us to try to change it in a big way. Sabrina Johnson, she's the founder of and CEO of Daré Pharmaceuticals or Bioscience, a company that's focused entirely on women's healthcare and innovation, which is amazing. From contraception to menopause to sexual arousal, we're going to talk about all of it. We're going to talk about the stigmas around it, the business realities, and why investing in women's health is so long overdue. Thank you, Sabrina, for being here.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Thank you so much. I'm so excited about the conversation.
Yeah, I can't wait. And Sabrina and I met, full disclosure, I've done some medical advising for Daré. And so because I'm a big believer in what she does and her products. And so, which we're going to talk about one of them because we're waiting.
I know.
So we'll get into that. But I like to always start with, I'm Gyno Girl and I like to see everyone has a backstory in comics. What is your backstory and what brought you into this part of women's health?
Absolutely. So as you alluded to, Daré Bioscience is really a purpose-driven biotech. Our sole focus is closing gaps in care for women, right? Developing therapeutics to address those needs that have not been addressed before. And my backstory is I've spent my entire professional career developing medicines for people. And I've had all the roles. I was a bench scientist. I've been a marketer. I've been a chief financial officer. I've done regulatory. I've done all of it. And before forming Daré, I've worked in pretty much every therapeutic area almost imaginable across healthcare. So I've had the privilege of getting to really make a difference in a lot of different disease areas. But several years ago, it occurred to me after watching all of this, I kept seeing gaps in care in women's health. And when I had an opportunity to make a change, I thought, I really want to make a difference there. I would love to really focus in and work with an organization that is going to be focused on women's health. And as I looked around, I couldn't find anyone doing it. When I got to the point for me, right, where I really wanted to lean in and make that happen, no one was doing the work. And after, spending several months, almost years saying to my husband, why is no one doing this? Why is no one solving these problems for women? You kind of wake up one morning and realize, well, I'm someone. I could, yeah. This, I can make a difference. And I have that background. Right. So, yeah. So I did. So I started the company 10 years ago, actually 11 years ago now. With that sole focus, right, let's figure out where there are some of the biggest gaps in care and how can we make a difference very quickly, right, to get real world solutions in the hands of women as quickly as we possibly can. So that's the backstory. And here I am. So, fast forward, here we are today with Daré.
Oh, I love it. I mean, this is amazing. Honestly, it's such a challenge. Sometimes you feel like you're beating your head against a wall. Like, why cannot we not move this needle forward? I think a lot of my listeners have watched or heard me talk about the pink pill. And, that is just one sort of example of, the journey to get sexual medicine medications for women with Cindy Eckert. So I want to ask you from your perspective too, why do you think pharma in general has such a hiccup when it comes to investing in female sexual products or, products that, I think, some of these non-hormonal menopausal products are getting a lot of investments and, a lot of things that I think are more on the uniquer side. But what's the deal? I feel like this is why we have such a predatory market. But what do you see as the biggest hindrances around it? Is it just the taboo of sex or what is it?
It's a lot of factors. And I think definitely the taboo is one aspect of it. But I have to tell you, we look at that and that's part of what we see is the opportunity. Let's change the conversation. And we look back in time, right? We think men have had Viagra now for almost 30 years. And before Viagra, no one talked about erectile dysfunction, right? That was taboo. There was stigma. There was embarrassment. I can look. Right. Exactly. And I can look at a lot of other healthcare areas and see similar groundbreaking moments where, you know, suddenly having a solution changed the stigma around a condition. Mental health is a great example, you know, of that. But all of those big innovations, you know, took companies, the pharmaceutical industry, in some ways being brave and patients being brave, right? Yeah. And speaking out. And sometimes it's hard to be brave, right? So if you are a pharmaceutical company, sometimes it's easier to work in the areas where everything else is doing the work.
I live down the street from where ASCO is every year, and it blows my mind. Okay. Yeah. So a number of, like, first of all, thousands of oncologists are walking through my neighborhood, and like literally like the amount of pharma input is astronomical. Like, it's amazing.
And that's a great, like, that's a great
example. I want cancer to be treated and cured, but like, you know, wow.
No, it's a perfect example. And I will say, so Daré Bioscience, we are, to our knowledge, we are the only publicly traded, you know, pharmaceutical company working solely and broadly in therapeutics for women's health. And it is because, crazy. You know, it's a lift to do that work. And if people haven't watched the Pink Pill documentary, it is a great example of what it takes to innovate in an area where there hasn't been prior innovation. And the example in that is sexual health. But I will tell you, as someone who has historically innovated in other therapeutic areas where we didn't have solutions in medicine, it's always hard being first, right? It's always hard being first. You're breaking the ground, you know, for everyone. But that's the work that has to be done. And when you do that, you know, there's great reward in serving people that haven't had a solution.
No, totally. I mean, obviously, you know, I'm sure I always think, obviously, it's like the amount of patriarchal sort of standards that exist within the medical community, like our paternalism toward women. I mean, that was a stark reality. I mean, that pill where they were like, well, what if she's so sleepy she can't take her kids to school the next day?
I know. It does exist. I'm not going to lie, right? Like, there is, that's, you know, part of the challenges in our society, right? Mm,
right. These are other women. Some of the times it's other women asking the question. It's not, you know.
Absolutely. No, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. It's because these are conversations. We don't talk about sex. We don't talk about menopause. We don't talk about change. We don't talk about periods. We didn't, right? Things are changing, though. We're starting to have those conversations. Right. But until you have the conversations and use the words. I give the example. I was invited to, at one point, to be on this podcast that airs on certain NPR stations and affiliates. Yeah. And what I describes are the things we work on. We do a lot of vaginal drug delivery, a lot of products that affect the vagina or affect, right? Mm. And after we recorded, they told me they couldn't use it.
Yeah.
Right. They told me they could not use it because I said vagina too often. And, you know, it's the anatomy.
What annoying.
You know, hoo-hoo.
Let's not say eyes and brain. Should we not say eyes, brain, teeth? Like, what? Right. I mean, it's crazy.
Right. But that's, you know, that's again, it's stigma, right? There's stigma. There's words we don't use. There's things we don't talk about. But, you know, that's the reason, though, women, we can make a difference. Like, speaking out, right? Asking for solutions. Asking for information.
No, for sure. And do you think that obviously we talk about the ideas of like patriarchy and sexism and all the things that kind of like, you know, sort of coat our society. I mean, I always, when people talk about OBGYN, I'm always like, you know, this is a field that was founded on racism and sexism, right? Like, is this our foundation that we've had to chip away at, you know, since its beginning? But do you think there's also this element of like, you know, we're going to talk about some female pleasure stuff in a minute, but like, do you think there's an element of like people that these people are fearing women getting pleasure? So, you know, we're talking about a lot of the things around, you know, the fact that obviously sexism exists in our society, those patriarchal norms. And, you know, I always talk when I teach about sort of health inequities in OBGYN, I always talk about how really our foundation in OBGYN is on the backs of racism and sexism, because, you know, even our most beloved gynecologists used to use, used to treat unanesthetized slaves to try to figure out, the best procedure for, white women. But I want to be cognizant of the fact that, like, this exists, and this is probably a problem in trying to get drugs that are for female arousal and pleasure, which we'll talk about. But I also wonder, like, how much is it that women don't seek their own pleasure? They don't think that they deserve pleasure. And B, men fear that pleasure. Like, you know, where do you think that is, this junction of?
I definitely think that I'll piece in. So going to the medical part first, right? And how we think about women. I think part of the challenge is definitely that often when we're thinking about women, we're also thinking of them as not a medical society in terms of practitioners, but a regulatory body looking at medicines for women.
Yeah.
Right. We're often not thinking about just her,
yeah,
but the fact that she could conceive,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Have a baby, right? What's going to happen to the baby?
Yeah.
And so kind of going back to even some of the earlier discussion about what makes it so hard if you're trying to develop pharmaceuticals for women, part of it is you have to think about, I want to make sure that I'm showing that whatever I'm developing is safe for her, but also what might happen to, a fetus. And it's an extra burden, right? But if you're serious about helping women, that's mm-hmm. something you have to look at. But to your question, though, around one, what even women feel like, women as themselves, what do they feel like they deserve? I will tell you, in our clinical studies, and we've talked to so many women, with arousal disorder and other, sexual dysfunctions, there is absolutely a level of guilt, right? A level of, and we see that. We see that in our studies. The women come in very distressed about, why is this happening? Why am I not feeling the way I used to feel? And like I said, guilt and confidence around it as well. So I do think, and that's cultural, right? I think there's a cultural component to that, right? On the one hand, not feeling like you deserve pleasure for yourself, and also feeling this responsibility of what role you might have in a relationship with your partner in terms of what you're supposed to be delivering or what is expected from you in that relationship. So we definitely see that when we've engaged with women and they talk about what they're experiencing and how they feel about, having less physical sensation, because that's what we focus on as a company, is how can we improve, right? How can we enhance what happens naturally and give a little help? Again, kind of like you do with men with erectile dysfunction, you're just giving them help with something that they want to have happen. But we definitely see women, they talk about it, the frustration that really for them translates into guilt, confidence, even maybe stress then about a sexual activity because they're not sure. And then there's definitely a piece of it, I will say. So, we talk to investors all the time because we that's how we do the work that we're doing, right? People for that research. Thank you. But often when we're talking to male investors, they will ask about, they'll say, wait, so why does that matter? We're talking about how important it is for women to have an appropriate response. I've often gotten like, why does that matter? I always think I feel sorry for your partner. But I think, but it goes back to your question though, really fundamentally, right? Is that as a society, we haven't elevated that for women. We haven't elevated that right.
Right. Well, we don't teach, teenagers or girls and women about, like, what are their pleasure, what the number one pleasure organ they have that they don't know anything about, right? But we didn't study that, we never examined, that we never thought we should deal with. I mean, so I think it's from like top down and bottom up too. Like, it's like both.
Exactly.
Issues. Like, we don't educate women that they deserve pleasure. This is how they can attain it. But we also don't, educate the clinicians and the doctors and all the people, like, how can we assess for it? And is this a conversation we should be even having? And so, which brings us to, like, let's talk about one of the drugs that we're all waiting desperately to get I talk about it literally every day. I mean, and I don't get a kickback for it. So if you ask why, I talk about it every day in my office because, you know, inevitably everyone in my office, midlife or not, has, you know, desire disorders. And then most of them, if they're in long-term relationships, we talk about responsive desire. And then we talk about arousal. And then this is how it comes up. So tell us about this, like, where did you come up with this? How did it start? And what is it? And what does it do? Tell us all about it.
Absolutely. So fundamentally,
interesting though, I have to say.
What?
I get like mixed emotions about the veins. Sometimes people are like, that's a kind of a strange name. I'm like, no, you have to dare to play with yourself.
Well, it came in part. So going back to the backstory. So the company name is Dare Bioscience, spelled like dare.
Yeah.
And I'm Italian, and I founded the company, so I got to name the company. That's the perk of founding a company. You get to name it.
Yeah.
And Dare in it, don't use the accent in Italian, but Dare in Italian means to give, and obviously dare in English means to be bold. And the foundation of the company is we are daring. Right, to give women the healthcare solutions that they deserve.
Yeah.
And now that we're starting to commercialize products, you know, we're trying to have dare somehow in the name. So we have dare to play, sexual health, dare to restore is for vaginal health.
Yeah.
Right. You get the idea. A lot of dare to reclaim, menopause.
Yeah. Right?
So they all have dare in it. It's really about, you know, women, we're being overlooked. Right.
Yeah.
So it's time we're daring to like bring stuff back for us. So just the background on the name.
I like that. I didn't know that. See, I learned something today. That's really cool.
Yeah. So that's where it came from. And as a company, you know, as I mentioned, what we try to do is figure out where are there gaps, right? Therapeutic gaps in care for women. But we really want to focus on where we can get solutions to women very quickly. Right. So what we want to try to always do is prioritize solutions for women where we know the science and we can be that powerful bridge to move that science forward and get the product in the hands of women.
Yeah.
So, you know, when we started the company, you know, 11 years ago, we went around talking to healthcare providers and women around where's a gap, right? Where do you not have what you want? Where would you like a solution? And we would design, I call it our blue sky process. We would design, like, pretend there's no limitations. What would be the perfect thing, right, to solve that problem?
Yeah. Yeah.
And when we were talking to women about sex, because we felt, you know, again, we're mostly women developing for women. So we also came in with preconceived notions of where we thought we should be working from our own life experiences and our girlfriends. And so, when we talk to people about sex and sexual function and what they wanted out of that, two things came out of it. One is we definitely found there was a challenge with the language. How do we talk about it? Because, and you touched on this when you talked about desire versus and responsive arousal and, you know, so part of it was trying to understand, you know, what are you actually looking to solve? And when we kind of got to the bottom of what they're looking to solve, what we really kind of heard consistency that they were looking to solve when you really dug in to understand what they were saying is they wanted more physical sensations, right? They were feeling like maybe over time, they weren't feeling the same level of sensations that maybe they felt years ago. And maybe they weren't also getting the same amount of lubrication that they used to get. And also in the conversations, the recognition that, you know, when you really dug in, that many times they understood that responsive arousal desire concept, that they understood that what needed to kind of happen first is to have the kind of pleasure sensations, right? Things getting kind of warmed up and going, and then they would feel more desirous in the moment and more excited about what was going to happen.
Yeah.
So when we take a step back then and think about, okay, what makes that biology happen? It's, you know, the same is what happens in men, in that physical arousal response is blood flow, right? You're getting blood flow to the genital tissue. And that's what's causing the pleasurable sensations, the warmth, the tingling that happens early on, the natural lubrication that comes from blood flow. So then it became kind of like, wow, well, that medicine exists, right? Viagra has mm-hmm. been on the market for a very long time for men. And that's just one example, but there are several of these kind of drugs that do that. That's what they do mechanistically. They're designed to just increase blood flow. And so then we just kind of went back to that target product profile, because what we heard from women is they wanted something to do that, but they did not want to have to take something orally. They did not want to have to take something every day. They wanted it to happen in the moment. They liked the idea of something that was kind of like a lubricant and form factor, in that they kind of understood the concept of something you would apply, before sexual activity. But then they also, that meant they wanted it to work really quickly. It had to be fast acting. They didn't want to have to, right, rub something on and wait for 30 minutes, for it to take effect. Yeah. And so we just took that feedback, and then we went and looked for how to do that. And it turns out it was actually a lot harder than I would have thought, because it turned out those drugs that are really fantastic given orally for men, for erectile dysfunction, they are, and sildenafil in particular, is actually really hard to formulate into a topical formulation that actually gets through the skin and the tissue.
Yeah.
Right. Our body, our skin, and even our mucosal membranes are designed to be protective, right? They're designed to keep stuff out.
Yep, exactly. Yeah.
So we had to find a company.
And you see it. I mean, this secondary piece is, all the ones that are popping up left and right, but continue your thought on that.
I'll finish on that. It was like the secret sauce here, quite frankly. The first step was finding actually a delivery technology, and ours is Dermaflex. So we got it from another company that had developed specifically this delivery technology for topical products, specifically ones that are called a highly charged molecule and that are difficult to get into this. They did it with like non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs that are also, traditionally kind of hard to get in, which is why often topical pain drugs don't work very well. And they had also, they were able to do this with sildenafil. And so then once we had the formula, it was really, for us, the first step was actually answering the question of like, does it work quickly? That was such a big part of the product profile that we heard consistently. Mm-hmm. So doing a whole bunch of studies to show, you do all the studies in animals to show it's okay there and all different kinds. And you do
walk the listeners through in case they don't know the number of phases needed.
Oh my goodness. So to give you some perspective.
What was phase one?
Yeah. So to give you perspective, actually, I'll walk through all the stuff. Yeah. Give me perspective. And particularly if we wanted to make sure that we looked at all the different ways and all the different orifices that the product might come in contact with, right? It's designed for vaginal and topical genital delivery.
Yeah.
But we did, and I'm a vegan, so I don't like to do animal studies, but we have to, it's the law.
Yeah.
So we did studies to look at oral toxicology, anal toxicology, vaginal toxicology in animals to show really long studies to show super safe in all those places. Then we had to do studies in men and women called phase one, where they're healthy. And in women, we looked at both pre and post menopausal. So because that there can be changes in the vaginal tissue. So the profile can be a little bit different from a side effect profile. So we needed to look at that. So you do all those studies. We also did what's called reproductive toxicology. I talked earlier about if you're going to study something in women that they're going to use a reproductive age, we want to be super sure that we understand what it does and most importantly, what it would not do right? To if she gets pregnant, did all that work. Then you start to get into studies to look at, the population of interest, right? People that have decreased arousal sensations, right? And you don't just go and do that study either. First, we show that the product gets into the tissue really quickly. So that study was a crazy study where women had to be in like stirrups with a heat sensing camera focused, right on their vagina and clitoris. And that's how you can see that it gets in quickly. Yes, we did that with Irwin. Yeah, Irwin Goldstein. And then, in our case, we ultimately, you know, this is being made available right now as what's called a compounded product, but we want to ultimately make it available as an FDA approved product. And so the next step then is working with the Food and Drug Administration to even just discuss what are the questions you ask women, right? Yeah. How do women talk about arousal? If we're going to now, you know, it's not practical to do all the studies and have people like have sexual activity in a laboratory, you know, and then look at heat and blood flow. You have to figure out what are the questions to ask. And that wasn't trivial. That was research we had to do just on of its own with women. You know, what are the questions? And then you go in and we did a study that is what's called placebo controlled, which means half of the people in the study get the cream, just the base cream, the Dermaflex technology with nothing in it. and then, you know, the other half get the actual Dare to Play Sildenafil cream product. And then we look at all those, you know, questions specifically around arousal sensations. But we also looked at downstream effects like the desire that we talked about or even orgasm. And we also looked at those questions that we learned from women that they also had in terms of interpersonal difficulties, the guilt, the confidence, right? The stress about sexual activity. Because you want to see that you're, you know, that how does the product change that? And it wasn't enough to just ask women how they were doing. We also wanted to look at what happened to the partner. Because the partner's going to get exposed, you know, to the product. So we also wanted to understand, you know, what happens with that partner exposure.
That's a one question I get asked almost. What does it taste like in case?
Yeah, no, the number one question we get also is what does it taste like? And fortunately, participants in the trial had a lot of oral sex. Yeah, participants in the study had a lot of oral sex. So we had a lot of opportunity to get the feedback on what it tastes like. Yeah. And it's a little salty. There are salt in the formulation. And so some people that, you know, the thing they would report is a saltiness, a slight saltiness. So, yeah, but hopefully that gives the listeners a sense. There's a lot that goes into it. And then you're not done there, right? We also want to make sure if this is being made available as a compounded product. And what that means is that the FDA has not yet reviewed the safety and effectiveness. We've submitted things to the FDA, right? But they haven't thoroughly reviewed the safety and effectiveness. Those data are available. But what's important...
Phil, you know how long it takes the FDA to approve things. What was it, 6 years or something?
Yes. I mean, we've said, people know this who follow our company, we've been in discussions with them for 2 years now since we completed what's called the phase two trial to align on design of the next phase that's required for registration. So it's a long process and that's ongoing for us, which is why we are really thrilled that there was a way to respond to healthcare providers and women who were coming to us and saying, we want the product now. We don't want to wait. There's nothing else available. Can you find a way to make this available? And we're thrilled that we were able to partner with an organization to do that. So there's pharmacies can make you products, but for something like this, where it's really important that it's made, it's a very specific formula of how you make it, and not just the ingredients, but how you mix the ingredients, how they're blended together to get the sildenafil into the tissue. You know, making this at a pharmacy just was not an option for this formulation.
Which is what typically happens in a compounding situation, right? When we don't have an FDA approved product, some of us will move toward compounding. And then this is what happens. You have to find a trusted compounder that has some regulation that they say they're going to put estradiol in it, that it's not, you know, a gummy or something.
Exactly. And for us, with this particular formulation, because of how difficult sildenafil is actually to get into a cream in this way, even if we'd wanted and found a great trusted, you know, pharmacy compounder, they actually would not be able to make the product. They would not be able to make this product. And so what we were thrilled is that under the FDA rules, they also allow for facilities that can make a product at a larger scale, which is what this formulation requires with the specialized equipment and how it all has to be mixed and made in order to get the sildenafil to work the way you want it to.
Same standard in each pack.
every single time.
You want to make sure you're
Yes, every team's exactly the same. And so we were able to work with this partner that can, they have to report to the FDA. They have to follow all the FDA's standards for pharmaceutical products, which is what you're alluding to, that they have to be, the tube you get today has to be exactly the same as the tube you might get 2 years from now.
Right.
That's the level of scrutiny and quality. And so we're really happy that we're able to do that. And it is, you know, it's coming soon.
Yeah.
That process is to do it at that level, it takes a lot of registrations that the facility has to go through, not just with the FDA, but with every single individual state. And not every state is the same in terms of what they're requiring.
That's why you have to batch, patients, right? Too.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Which is what started collecting in January, I think, or something like that.
Yes.
In most states. In some states.
Yep.
Yeah. Awesome. I mean, that's so interesting, I think, because people don't realize or recognize how much work and effort it takes to get a product out, right? Because I always tell them, like, because obviously in sex med, we have to compound some things. We don't have everything. And so, you know, I always say, well, the difference is like trying to find a trusted compounder, because it's like if you go to, you know, a dispensary and get a gummy that you want to help with sleep, but it tastes like candy in one day, and the next day it knocks you out for 3 days, like...
Right.
The thing, like, you don't know, because there's no, but and tell me how you would explain, because I was talking to a few other doctors who, you know, like, are pretty much never do compounding at all. They're very opposed to it, but you know, how do you talk to people who, you know, think to make this, to think of this in a different way, like, what messaging do you give? Because I think that's what you know, she was alluding to, is that she's someone that speaks out against compounding, but yet is a real supporter of Dare. And so she kind of like was saying that people came for her because, you know, what happened to your anti-compounding stance? And so, like, what kind of messaging would you then say to give to the communities at large to make them understand why this is a different product compared to...
Yeah, it's a great question. And I will say, as someone who has spent my... you know, over 35 years now, shocking for me, in the industry of developing medicines and pharmaceutical products, and having spent an entire career having to work towards the kind of quality standards and consistency that is expected when a product is going to ultimately attain an FDA approval and be manufactured under what's called good manufacturing practices for pharmaceuticals. And those quality standards, I too have recognized that pharmacy compounding serves a need, right? There may be that like individual patient that needs something that is just not available another way. Mm-hmm. And you simply, you know,
product in a bigger batch of things, you know, that kind of thing.
Exactly. Like they need something. And so I understand there's a place for that. But the challenge with that is all the things that you talked about, that there's not the same consistency. So anytime that there's an FDA-approved product in that same form factor, right? Like if you're looking for an estradiol cream and there is an FDA-approved estradiol cream, that FDA-approved version is always 100% of the time going to be at a higher standard of quality and consistency.
Mm-hmm.
It's legally required under good manufacturing practices than a compounded product, which are just not held to those standards. And it's not that they're bad at a pharmacy.
Yeah.
And I'm talking about pharmacy compound.
Right.
So for us, what we needed to figure out is we need to feel comfortable that we're operating over here at the same level of good manufacturing pharmaceutical standards as if the product were FDA approved,
right,
even though it's not. And that is it's a higher bar. It's a higher bar of testing. It's a higher bar of quality control. It's a higher bar of sourcing back every single ingredient.
Yeah.
Right? Every single lot, every single batch.
Yeah.
And that's just not achievable at pharmacy compounding, not because they don't want to, but because those are not the standards that they're held to. And also the sizes of batches that they're manufacturing, you could never do that.
Right.
So that I think is why people who have been anti in general compounding have embraced and have thanked us for making this available, because it is at a different quality standard. And also because we are doing the work, we have done work. The other thing is a traditional compounded product has 0000000 actual data on its formulation.
Yeah, they don't.
Right? All you know is the goals you might have by saying, wow, sildenafil does something cool in men. I'd love to mix it into a cream. I sure hope it's going to have that effect in women. Yeah. And the difference here.
Make someone scream. I don't know. You know?
Exactly. Like that. You hope.
We hope.
And the difference here is that, you know, we've done work to demonstrate for this specific formulation, this specific formula that we're making, what it does. So you know what to expect, right? Whether that's in, we talked about the reproductive toxicology studies that we did to make sure it's doing no harm.
Yes.
From a reproductive perspective to the, you know, studies we've done.
Erectile dysfunction, you looked at that?
Yeah.
Does it, right?
Yeah.
They still need to take it orally.
Well, I will say we are going to come out with some data. There is some data looking at this formulation in men.
Okay.
It helps gets them through the tissue. It does, you know. It's an sildenafil.
Yeah.
So we'll have some published findings out.
Sorry.
On that. Okay.
Darren ultimately too, maybe.
Yeah, exactly.
That's really cool. Okay. And so tell us, I know there's other things in the works too, because you're just not Dare to Play. What other things are in the works? For, I know, for menopausal women, for younger women.
Yeah.
What do you got?
Yeah. So again, everything we do, it kind of comes back to, you know, show it, not just assume what something is going to do, but generate the data to show it. And there are a couple other, there are two other categories where I'm really proud of some things that are coming out where that we have a lot of gaps and the standard has not been show what it does. One is in the vaginal, kind of the vaginal health space. We're hearing a lot more about the vaginal microbiome in general, right? We now talk about our gut microbiome and we're drinking probiotic sodas and, you know, doing all this stuff for our gut microbiome. And we're starting to learn about our vaginal microbiome and how important it is to keep that kind of ecosystem working well, because when it is disruptive, it actually can lead to serious health outcomes. It increases your risk for more serious infections. And also, you know, could lead to even preterm birth, infertility. There's a lot of reasons to try to keep it healthy. And so there's been a lot of buzz about probiotics and probiotics for the vaginal microbiome, most of which are oral, which makes no sense. That's not down there. It's not happening. Okay. So we are launching, coming soon. It's called FloraSync LF5. It's in what we call our Dare to Restore. So they all have Dare to Restore, family products, but it's a probiotic that was actually developed, in Italy, by a company that isolated from women basically that have self-reported that they've never had a yeast infection, right? It's just pain that women get a lot. They isolated a strain of bacteria from them and then studied it in women. So it's been studied and published in women to really show that the probiotic is doing what it is supposed to be doing in terms of creating that healthy, balanced microbiome environment. So that is coming soon, and we're really excited to bring that here to the U.S. It's from Italy. It's exciting that women, to bring it here. And then menopause is one of those other menopause hormone therapy is a category that we have kind of from day one at Dare has just perplexed us in the fact that we know for kind of estradiol and progesterone, know the levels that one needs to be delivering to kind of return someone to premenopausal. We have read with great interest all the guidance from the Menopause Society around recommending that non-hormonal is generally preferred if possible. And also for women with a uterus, having both progesterone and estradiol together, your progesterone is there for safety and estradiol is what's going to do the work to replace the hormones. And yet there's nothing out there that has been clinically studied to do that. And this is a sector where there's a lot of compounding.
Yes.
No data. Mm-hmm. Right. scary to me, compounding, like, better than it searched it, and you don't know what you're getting, and what are the levels, what are you returning to?
Sure.
So we've developed a vaginal ring. It's just a once a month product that's inserted vaginally. It has estradiol and progesterone together. It's already been studied
in a study. Like the micronized progesterone. It's not synthetic, right?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's bioidentical. Exactly. Yep. Micronized and with estradiol. And it's in just this once a month, you know, vaginal ring. And we've studied
it. I'd say the progesterone molecule is a little bit bigger, right? So it has to be a bigger ring.
Yeah, I don't have one right here. Yeah, and we've already studied it in women. We've run two different trials, you know, in women, postmenopausal women, to understand, you know, what do they see, you know, can they insert it? Is it comfortable? Right, all those kind of questions. But also importantly, we wanted to show that when we look at blood levels, because we're really looking, even though it's vaginal, it's really to deliver the hormones for systemic effect. Right. So we know estradiol can be so important in not just your vaginal health, but your bone health, your cardiovascular health, your brain health. And so want to show that we get to the levels that women have. We look at, like, we're trying to match to the follicular stage, right? Yep. There's different levels throughout, like, the menopausal cycle. So we're looking to match to follicular stage levels for both the estradiol and progesterone. It's been published.
Yeah.
So we're looking to make that available. We're targeting next year. We're working hard.
Wow. That's amazing. You know, because the truth is, and I'm curious, I haven't read any of the studies yet, but you said one was published already, right?
They're both published. Yeah, all the studies. Yeah, both sets of studies.
So, because I'm curious to see, you know, because a lot of times people don't tolerate oral migraines, progesterone, while they have side effects. Because so sometimes we'll tell them to put it vaginally. They have less side effects, but we think still you have uterine protection. So I'm wondering about that. Like, do you look at whether or not the people that are doing it vaginally, you know, got any of the benefits that we normally see, right? Like the sleep or the mood or the whatever.
That's a great question. We looked at it's called the MQOL, like a menopause quality of life, that has a lot of questions around. So we saw, you know, we saw the improvements that we had hoped and expected to see.
Okay,
right. Well, with the delivery. So
maybe you could email me those. I'm curious.
I will. Yeah. I'll send you the
publication. Oh, that's so exciting.
Yeah, we did two studies. So one, and actually just a funny story about it. So we do a lot of these, we do a lot of our earlier studies, what we call phase one in Australia, or phase one, two in Australia. We have a subsidiary there, and we have some sites that we work with there. So it's just super efficient.
Yeah.
So the first thing we did, we had women, they're all postmenopausal, about 30 women or so. And we had them use the product, but just for 1 month. Uh-huh. And at the end of the study, they all wanted to keep using it. And, you know, helps work. And we were like, well, no, we're not doing that. And technically, we really didn't need to do another study
because
we got the data we needed for the 1 month study. But then they were so interested. And so we went back and said, okay, you can all come back. And we'll do a 3 month study, and you can use it once a month, you know, every 3 months, and because it's 7 months, and see how that looks. So we ended up doing that study really because the women, we had enough rings to do it, we had enough made, and the women in Australia were really interested in it. So
awesome! I'm sure there's going to be a big pull for it, because you know, I think that vaginal delivery, that not thinking about, you know, if I'm changing, did I change my patch? Did I do this? Like, it's going to be big. I really think it's going to be big.
And you hit on, I mean, again, as I said this earlier, we're at Dari, we're primarily women designing for women. And you don't have to be, again, a rocket scientist to know, like, it's hard when you're trying to manage, my patch goes on at this schedule, but then I got to do my vaginal, you know, progesterone on this schedule, or I'm using the estradiol cream on these days, then I got to do my vaginal progesterone or my whatever, or... you know, or I'm going to get an IUD to get my, you know, it's a lot.
I feel bad asking of the patients, you know, because I'm like, I wouldn't do all the things.
Again, we're all, you know, we're also, you know, women tend to be, you know, kind of the managers of their households, right? We're you know, we're dealing with a lot. Then we got to remember which day to do which thing. So, so some of the things we try to do as a company is just think about, let's be real, right? What is, I use that term real world solution. And I mean it very broadly. Like, what really is going to work well in the real world?
Exactly. Well, are there going to be more? Is there going to be more than one estradiol dose? Or right now
we developed two different doses. I will say, and you'll see this in the publication, the lower dose just did not work as well. It got just to kind of the target levels.
Yeah.
So right now we're really leaning towards only making the higher dose available because it was as well tolerated from a side effect profile, and just had much better achievement of the target levels that we're looking for.
Oh, awesome. Okay. Are you going to tackle testosterone?
It is definitely on my list. It is 100% on our list.
It's on the to-do list.
It's on my to-do list. It's on our Dare to-do list. And in all seriousness, it's one where, again, I think it is shocking to me that how hard healthcare providers have to work to get women testosterone that you feel comfortable is a high quality, but then all the, craziness they have to go through with trying to get the dose right, use 1/10th, 1/12th of the male, and, don't get confused, and all the calculations you go through to figure out the levels. And I'd love your input right now. Like, what we have been hearing is what would be really helpful is to have a topical formulation that is your target amount, right? And that we show, systemically is getting to the target you want.
Like that Androfeton in Australia, the one that's now going to be offered in, that I used to, before I would use the FDA approved men's testosterone for my patients, I would routinely have my patients upload the prescription and they get it mailed from Australia. And after the pandemic hit, I found that they were like some more delays. And then, the whole issue around testosterone and all the regulations. But for my patients loved it. It just turned out to be cheaper to do it this way, which is like FDA approved men's testosterone, because and then access. It was just easier to access sometimes on the pharmacy. But but I think, if you could get that transdermal formulation that's just titrated for women, like it'd be wonderful, right? Just like the Androfeton.
We definitely think so. So it's something we're looking at. And for us as a company, we have to be confident that, we can make it in a way that makes sense. It's going to be reproducible and that it's hitting the medical targets, that are needed. So,
yeah, I'm sure.
But we definitely get the need is there.
The need is there. Awesome.
100%.
Well, thank you, Sabrina. This has been amazing. You talked about how, this is a company that is sort of publicly funded. Like, how, if we're going to put in our show notes, if someone wants to be inspired to invest $10 or $10,000, whatever investment they can do.
Yep.
But tell me a little bit how you came about that sort of discussion and decision too.
Yeah. One of the things that we wanted to do, whenever we talk to women, healthcare providers, whoever, about what we're doing, I invariably, someone will say, oh my gosh, thank you so much. I would love to support your work. How can I invest in your company to support that? Because, by the way, your listeners should know, only 1% of private investment that goes into developing new pharmaceutical products actually goes into companies like ours that are innovating solely for women. 1%. So it's hard to do a lot with 1% of dollars. And so people come to us wanting to make a difference. But typically the irony is investment in a public company like ours is normally only available to those same people that have made a decision that they're only going to allocate 1%, right, of their pot of money to the kind of work we're doing.
Yeah.
And so I can't take credit for this. One day someone said to me, you need to figure out a way. I want to give Dare money, right? And I don't have a way to do that, right? I don't have a way to give Dare money, not as a donation, but I want to be an owner. And if you buy shares on the open market, you're actually not, you're owning our shares, but that money doesn't come to us.
Yeah.
Right? So the only way the money comes to us to support the work is if we do what's called a public offering.
Yeah.
So we found a way. We work with the Securities and Exchange Commission. We work with NASDAQ, where we're listed, because we said, we want to do this. It's a great idea. We want to do something so that anyone who cares about what we're doing can become an owner. It's not a donation. It's you're going to own shares. And, $250 is the minimum.
Yeah.
So $250 and a credit card, you can go as high as you want. and can support the work. And that is, you know, it's how this work happens.
100%. So, yeah, I think it's great. And I feel like this is somebody, this is something that everyone, you know, that wants to make a difference, right? We all are like, what can we do to further women's health? Yes. You know, there's research, there's, you know, getting more equitable, you know, access to things. But this is one step, right? This is one step in the pie because we have a lot of work.
Yeah, I always say, I mean, there's the if you think about like really optimizing your health, there's a few pillars to that, right? One is information and prevention, right? One is like testing, right? Diagnosis and testing and access and information. But then the other is once you figure out that there's a need, it's having a therapeutic, right? Having that solution, right? We need all of that.
We need all that. Yeah. So there's a solution and you guys can all join in. So amazing. Well, thank you, Sabrina. I love the work that you're doing. I'm super excited about all the products that you've mentioned, actually. I can't wait to, try some of them myself. But otherwise, thanks for being on today. And, we'll put in the show notes how people can find you or, you know, if they don't want to do anything. Thanks for doing this. I mean, it's amazing.
Oh, my gosh. Thanks for the conversation.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. Thanks for what you are doing, right? To really be vocal and do all you're doing to remove the stigma.
We all have to do our part because, you know, at some point when we leave this world, we want to have some imprint. So, you know,
yes,
it should be about support. So, thanks so much, Sabrina. Again, thanks everyone for listening to Gyno Girl Presents Sex, Drugs, and Hormones. I'm Dr. Samina Rahman, Gyno Girl. Remember, I'm here to educate so you can advocate for yourself. Please join me
a second. Please subscribe to this podcast. I'd love for you to be a follower and learn as much as you can about the things that we're going to talk about with all the people on our journey. Please review us on Apple or Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. These reviews really help. Review us, comment, tell me what else you want to hear to get more information. My practice website is www.cgcchicago.com. My website for Gyno Girl is www.gynogirltv.com. My Instagram is Gyno Girl, so please follow me for some good content. Additionally, I have a YouTube channel, Gyno Girl TV, where I love to talk about all these things on YouTube. And please subscribe to my newsletter, Gyno Girl News, which will be available on my website. I will see you next time.